Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse Pro Lacrosse Podcast. This is week 6.5/7. I am Kyle Devitt, the gear and lifestyle editor at Inside Lacrosse, and today I am joined, as always, by
Chris Rosenthal, Inside Lacrosse freelance contributor and pro lacrosse analyst.
Yes, and we have a very exciting update for you if you're an MLL fan. Not a lot for if you're a PLL fan, but we'll have something for you later on the podcast because this is the PLL bye week before they play their All-Star game next weekend in LA. So we're going to jump through the MLL weekend recap. And Chris, it's your MLL week, so I'll let you get us started. I did watch all these games, but I'm going to let you take the lead here because it's your week.
All right, so let's get started. Kind of a weird week because it started on Thursday with a pair of day games. Camp week, if you want to call it. Used to just kind of be a camp game. I think they started, if I'm not mistaken, maybe up in Hamilton or something like that. But people think it's a good idea. So they get a bunch of campers out and they watch some lacrosse. First one, Denver Outlaws 18, Atlanta Blaze 17. So this is Atlanta's third game in 6 days, and they made them go out to Denver to play it, which seems grotesquely unfair to me. I think whoever made the schedule hates Atlanta's guts. Not only do you have to contend with fatigue and, you know, any sort of hazards of elevation, and that is not just a myth or something like that, that can really mess you up. And it was really, really, really hot. It was 101 degrees at halftime. And, oh, then Atlanta has to play on Saturday, too.
Yeah, 102 in the fourth quarter. Did they play this game on Mercury? Like, where they played this in the NFL stadium, right? The Broncos stadium. Where were the NFL wind misters? You know, those things when it's like super hot in the NFL, they got like the misters that kind of like shoot water at you. Right. Is they all at Broncos minicamp? I don't know. Seems weird. Should have been there.
Yeah. No, it seemed very weird. And, I mean, I was just like, man, the kids were hopefully having a good time, but they could have also been miserable. It just seemed really hot there. But I'm sure they had ice cream or something, so they were fine. So anyway, game itself. So no surprise, the Outlaws jumped out to a lead, as you would expect from a team that, you know, just had to drag itself across the country and play another game. So they jumped out to an 8-3 lead, but then, you know, you finally had guys like Brian Cole, Randy Stotts, usual suspects, kind of able to right the ship, get some things going right for them. You know, both of those guys had these moments where they just kind of put the whole team on their shoulders. And Randy Stotts versus Finn Sullivan had a series of moves where it's basically kind of just a classic Stotts sort of moves. If you've seen him before, you know, back in, very, very post-game-esque moves, inside roll and finish. Basically, one of them, he really started shooting before he was even done with his inside roll because he just, you know, he knows when he gets that position at the correct angle. So very strong performances for him that brought the thing back and made it very close. Another thing kind of tangentially to this, no Mikey Schlosser for the Outlaws. The broadcast said he was out with an injury. Going to have to get some confirmation as to what the injury is and the degree of severity, because you would think this would be, you know, a pretty important game if they really, really needed him. But again, no speculation as to what it was. He was there and, you know, didn't seem to have a cast or anything like that. So, something to watch moving forward.
Yeah. He put on a nice little performance there in a sideline interview as well, where all they did was argue about how great his hair is,
sure.
Which I feel like this is a great time to announce that I will be releasing the second annual Mikey Schlosser All-Stars this week on InsideTheCross.com, which is traditionally all the players that are players to watch but haven't been named All-Star. And Mikey Schlosser was named to the All-Star roster, so maybe I have to rename it. Hopefully not. I kind of like how it sounds, so be ready to check that out. What do you think? What should I do there?
I think you stick with Mikey Schlosser as being the patron saint of, you know, really good players who aren't yet, you know, recognized as all-stars. So now he is, you know, now he is the role model that those guys can look up to. And they'll say, hey, someday maybe I will be the next Mikey Schlosser. you know, so they can keep him in that sort of pedestal.
What a thing to be. What a thing to be. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, and yeah, I did catch. I wonder if he gets tired of hearing. I mean, there's two ways to look at it. Do you think if you have hair like that, you are flattered and enjoy hearing people talk about it? Or do you think he's like, hey, listen, you know, this is just me growing out my hair, doing my thing. Please stop objectifying me. I am more than just my hair.
I mean, you're like the greatest fan of Ryan Drenner that ever lived. And he cut his hair when he had hair like that. So I'd be more interested to hear your viewpoint than mine.
Well, I don't think so. I am definitely not the expert on how it feels to have or get rid of long hair in that sort of fashion, as my hair will never resemble either of those gentlemen's hair. I do think it would probably be something different. I mean, I will say this. So I grew my hair out last summer. I didn't cut it for like 6 to 8 months, and it got really big. But again, like I said, my hair does not grow. It does not cascade quite like a Drenner or a Slaughter. So people would come up and be like, you know, hey, your hair looks great. But I didn't really, I didn't think I got it as consistently as they did. Like, nobody ever really made it a part of who I was, you know? So I feel like I was more able to just ignore it than having somebody, you know, constantly making that be like a characteristic. But similar to, I'm sure, what happened to Drenner and what would happen to Schlosser should he ever decide to cut it, when I did cut it, way more people started talking about what it used to be than when I did have it long.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, you cut it.
Yeah. There gets to the point, if anyone has ever tried to grow their hair out, there gets to be a point where, like, you just look weird. It's like a month of looking weird. If you can deal with that, that's great. But no matter what your hair type is, if you have like a shaved head and you go from shaved head into, boom, here's my new longer hairstyle, you look weird at some point. They just do. That's what happens. But I think Mikey Schlosser looks amazing and should just keep it how he goes, the greatest man slash golden retriever hybrid that has ever existed. So continue with the game, though. We're on a hair tangent. It's getting real weird. People are already turning the podcast off. So
right. Yeah, so there was a game. Let's cut to the, I'm going to say, the most exciting, controversial part of this game, which you might guess an 18-17 game, came at the end. Time's running out. Randy Stott's pass sails upfield. An outlaw defender scoops it, but it gets checked away, like, you know, a split second afterward. The ground ball gets recovered by an Atlanta midfielder, gets the ball back. Atlanta brings it up, fires, misses the cage as the shot clock is running out. And I believe there are 38 seconds left in the game. This is basically like they kind of have to tend to Finn Sullivan, who had some sort of leg issue, maybe a cramp or something like that. There's definitely a stoppage of play. The teams huddle up for a while, come back out. Atlanta picks up the ball, and then they're like, okay, here's what we're going to do. And then the ref is like, psych, that's not what you're going to do. It's not your ball. And then it goes to Denver, and Denver runs out the ball. And Atlanta is very angry about it because they think it's their ball. So what did you think about that?
So I'm glad you brought this up. I went back and watched this whole sequence several times. My first thought when I watched it was that the Denver defenseman who ran out the ball near the half field, Andrew Newbold, never had possession of the ball. So he looks like he has it near the half line, but it's already checked before he can get a hard cradle on, right? So the shot clock has to keep running, and it does. So it gets passed up, advances upfield to Shane Jackson. But before that ball gets to Shane Jackson at the top of the two-point line, the operators turned the shot clock off, and there was 5 seconds left. But they turned it off for no reason, because Atlanta still had the ball. So they get it to Shane Jackson. There's 3 seconds left. He passes to Brian Cole, who burns 2 seconds catching and carrying and then shoots it, and there goes the final seconds. Technically, it's the right call, but the clock operator screwed up really badly to not keep the shot clock on and going so the Blaze could see how many seconds there were left on that clock as opposed to the game clock. And I want to say, this is rant number one of the podcast, this is a common theme in pro lacrosse, a plague, if you will, that the Red Hats, who are the people that kind of operate everything from the table, have been making mistakes all season in both leagues. Late stops on shots, early starts on shot clocks, failing to reset after pipe shots, etc. I don't know how we stop it without a vigilant army of really good SIDs being overpaid, and that's the key, to fix the mistakes of, let's be honest, younger and thus cheaper clock operators. This has always been a problem in pro lacrosse, and it's also why the stats suck. Pay the experienced and competent ops people their money. If you want a professional league, you cannot cut the corner here. You cut it somewhere else. I don't care where it is. Until pro lacrosse in general realizes that simple fact, it's always going to seem more minor league than anyone wants to portray anything to be. And this game, like, technically what happened was okay, but it's not the ref's job to tell the clock what to do. The clock operators should already know what's going on, and they are supposed to tell the ref. So massive, massive problem there. Technically, it's the right call. And also, Atlanta almost got it back on that ride. They made it difficult for Denver, and Denver did get it over, but it took way longer than they thought, and they only had 20 seconds to play with after their timeout. But what happened in the end is what you're going to describe next.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just to wrap it up. So it was 17-17 when this whole thing took place. So Denver gets the ball afterward, and they work it around for a little bit of time. Kavanaugh kind of feeds it in the middle. I believe Ryan Lee takes the shot, bounces off of the pole, off of the post, and Zach Currier, it happens to bounce right to him. He scoops up the rebounded shot, fires the game winner in with 2 seconds left. Obviously, the Blaze players are incredibly angry. You know, they're saying somebody was, you know, chasing down the ref, as the ref is obviously trying to hightail it out of town. You can see kind of the post-game sort of footage. There's all these players still standing there screaming, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. It's kind of like a car crash or like a bar fight that spills out or something like that. Everybody's just pointing and yelling. I mean, you got to figure out a team like the Blaze still working to try to climb into that upper echelon. You know, this season and historically, a win over the Outlaws in Denver would have been huge for their resume. And I don't think, especially at the time, I don't think they had a good enough explanation as far as what happened. And, you know, maybe they got something later, you know, maybe they've gotten some emails about it later, but this would have been an especially great time to have, you know, some sort of interviews with the coaches or something like that. Or you know what else? You know what I kind of missed today when I was thinking about this game? I missed the old press conference phone calls. Ultimately didn't work out so great, but I would have loved to have a couple minutes and have these coaches break down what they saw in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously had the luxury of being able to rewind and watch 5 times to figure it out. So it's actually really, and I don't mean to cast aspersions on the players. Clearly, they were not told, and the coaches weren't told what was even happening. Even Seaman looked confused in the huddle. Do you know what I mean? That's why the clear was like barely set up for Denver. That's why they had such trouble getting the ball over. They had to run it out with 2 guys and then hope that a long pole made a pass that bounced at the guy's feet and he picked it up and they called the timeout over the half line. Like, I get it. I'd be mad too, but it's not the ref's fault at all. It's the clock operator's fault. And sorry, I don't know your name who did it, but you know it was you. The refs know it was you too, but they're not going out. You're not seeing interviews with refs where they're going to go out and say that. You know what I mean? It's tough, and I realize that pro lacrosse is expensive, and you're going to cut corners somewhere. I don't know where you're. I don't think you can cut it there. I think maybe you cut it at the guy that serves beer. like less important to the outcome of the game? Maybe? I don't know.
Probably.
I don't know. Maybe cut down a couple of those guys. Maybe have lines. Make it look, you know, desirable. I don't know. It left a bad taste in my mouth for sure, especially considering, like, if I was sitting there watching it, I would have no idea what happened because of how it all played out, which is really unfortunate.
Right. Yeah, and that was kind of the other sticking point. There wasn't some sort of announcement that we witnessed. You know, we just had to figure out what happened after the game when Seaman was being interviewed. And they were like, hey, you know, what was that all about? Because nothing had been relayed to the broadcast booth.
Yeah, they didn't know either. That's a good point. The broadcasters had no idea either.
Yeah, it was a tough look. I mean, it's a good game. Very entertaining game. Kind of a clumsy finish there. And you know, tough look. But I think we can go to the next one, unless you closing thoughts on that one?
No, I'm good. I've already been too mean. And we're like 5 minutes into the podcast. So.
All right. Next game. Similar situation. We got another day game here. New York Lizards 15, Boston Cannons 12. So this one, notably, I would say the first thing that stood out to me, both Mark Cockerton and Rob Pinnell started off very quiet. And that's kind of shocking because those two are kind of people who have feasted on these matchups. So, you know, I was expecting to see a lot coming out of those guys. Rob Pinnell had just been flying across the country. Who knows if this had anything to do with it? Just come from the ESPYs. Maybe his legs were a little, you know, cramped after the flight or something like that. It took him a while to get going. I think he kind of turned a corner as far as his performance goes. When he hadn't done much in the first half, real late, had kind of a it was basically almost like a one-man sort of ride situation where he came up and stole the ball and kind of triggered a play for New York, got things going. You know, like they always say, the great players can make things happen when their shots aren't falling. So he kind of made it work then, and then, you know, a shot came around in the second half. But so aside from those guys, Boston jumped out to the early lead in this one. They were the ones in control early. Boston has this big run, gives them an 8-4 lead, but New York climbs back, and then they tied it up with Dylan Malloy's goal, which you might have seen on SportsCenter or something like that, where effectively he killed a guy.
Yeah, especially this season, I see highlights from both leagues, and I go, you know, that was like borderline highlight. I don't know why we're like hyping that up too much. And then I see highlights and think, oh God, please don't show that man losing his soul on the internet again. And then I giggle. And this was the latter, because serious truck stick action. Three guys. He basically beat four guys to score. Four. Runs to the corner, flicks it between the guy's legs, a la kind of a little Gibson-esque, if you will, from last year. And then picks it up, runs it in, takes the contact, takes another incidental slide, and buries it. It's phenomenal. Definitely check it out if you haven't seen it yet. One of the best just I'm a man goals that I've seen all season, for sure.
Yeah, Dylan Malloy has these moments where, I mean, he's a consistently talented dodger, and he's very good at turning the corner, and, you know, kind of lowering his shoulder. He has a wide skill set, but then there are also these moments where he's just like, all right, kids, time's up, and he's just going to take over. And that was definitely what happened here. You know, you usually see players more interested in dodging or, you know, avoiding that sort of thing, but for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe he did the math. There was something going on where he was just like, no, I see you standing there, and I don't want you to be standing there anymore, and just kind of blew the gentleman up. This was just a great game for Dylan Malloy. He was pretty much unstoppable the whole game.
You best know, game of the year. Goals. Easy.
Absolutely.
Easy.
Hands down. Either scoring goals or else he was drawing penalties from guys who were like hanging all over him, you know, trying to, you know, headlock him and bring him down to the ground, because he was just a monster all game long. So yeah, awesome game from Dylan Malloy, player of the game in my opinion. I think the player of the game officially was Austin Kapp per the broadcast, but who also played well. But Dylan Malloy was a monster of a human. One notable thing from this game, other kind of tangential notable thing, in-game coach interviews. hand down the broadcast headset to the coaches during the games, putting them in a little tiny box on your screen and asking them some questions. You had Joe Beninati and Quint talking to them, like, Coach, what are you seeing out there? What do you think about this and what do you think about that? What did you think about the new innovation of in-game coach interviews?
Well, Chris, I feel like I've seen it before. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I feel like I've seen that exact same thing before.
Hmm.
Right?
So are you implying, I don't want to put words in your mouth here, are you saying there's the chance that we have seen coaches, lacrosse coaches?
Yeah.
Or just coaches?
I would say lacrosse coaches, yeah, yeah.
Interviewed during games.
Yeah. I think what I'm also saying is that the MLL is entirely reactionary with every new thing they do. Period.
I see. You know, so here's what I'm going to say to that. I am very excited about PLL Season 2. And obviously PLL Season 2 will coincide with the next season of the MLL. But when the MLL reloads next season, we're going to have, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a lot more, but not only will we have this whole crop of, you know, players coming out from college who will have, you know, kind of seen, okay, what the MLL is doing this year, what the PLL is doing this year, and, you know, doing number crunching, how many available spots, and this and that, this and that. We got it this year to a degree, but we didn't really know, you know, where's Goodrich going? Where's this guy going? You know, it was all kind of fresh. But next year, we have something to go by. We have, like, a resume. We know what can happen, and we're just going to have this big crop of guys fighting out for spots. And also, everything off-field, like, not gameplay, but, like, technological speaking, IP property, like, MLL can steal anything the PLL thought of this year.
Yeah.
If they want to.
They should.
Right. And will the PLL have to think of all new things? Or will they just say, well, we did it first and see if people care who does it first?
I mean,
I don't know.
It's funny because both leagues are pretending like the other league doesn't exist until it suits their own narrative. Which sure. is like why neither one of them, like, again, we don't care about this, but it's true. Why neither league will retweet this podcast when we tweet it out when it comes live, even though they listen to it. And I know they do because they've told me they do. And I've been yelled at for things I've said on here. So, I think what we're going to see is competition makes people a little crazy at first. But in the end, competition is great for the consumer, right? It makes a better product. So if PLL is succeeding with a bunch of things, why wouldn't the MLL just steal it? Just do it. Why wouldn't they? I mean, you could get accused of doing it just because of that, but, like, who cares? Is that going to make you not watch MLL if you were already watching it? Hell no. You're going to be like, oh, we're adapting. Okay, cool. Like, you can take an angle from either side, but at the end of the day, the competition between the two entities is what's going to make pro lacrosse better. And the narrative that everyone keeps pushing of, like, there's not enough money, there's not enough people, there's not enough of this. Maybe, but we won't know that for some time. Like, we don't know that now, and we won't know that a year from now. And we probably won't know it 2 years from now. So what we can do as people that, well, we cover it, but we're also fans of lacrosse and we're fans of professional lacrosse, and we've been that way for a long time, we can just celebrate it. Because it's great. I mean, the one thing that PLL is doing that MLL clearly just won't do is air games in HD. So.
And I mean, any sort of adjustment that they make in that front is going to be better for us, too. So.
Yeah.
I mean, we really went out here. This is just like, you know, the rule of the consumers or whatever. It's basically if you have two people trying to vie for your attention. And, you know, basically it's like this. I feel like we don't really discuss this enough because people on the internet want to approach this from a sort of a choose your sides and we're going to beef sort of approach.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm team PLL and, you know, let me go on Instagram and be mean to MLL players or whatever. Like, you know, like, in my opinion, that's the wrong approach to this. Guys, they want our love. They want our attention. They will do everything for us. Let them.
Yeah.
You don't have to approach this like yelling at one of them. Let them give you something cool.
Yeah. And I've said this many times, and every time I say it, people are like, oh, I can't believe you said that. Eventually there will be a coming together. Eventually it has to. It's the only thing that makes sense. And we're not in a Russia versus USA Cold War here. There is not mutually assured destruction. There are no nukes. Okay? This is just a battle being fought on the streets of the internet. And you can, like, choose not to fight in it and just enjoy it. You know? Like, we're here being critical of both entities, and we're providing you analysis with games that are played. So this isn't really a PLL week, so you're going to have less PLL content here. Does that mean less people listen to the podcast? Sure. But, like, we can't manufacture things out of nothing. That's not what we do. We're here to give you commentary, give you analysis, give you kind of a little bit of insight if we have it, and that's it. You know, that's our role. Like, you can, and just like we chose our role, you can choose your role. You can be the hater idiot on Twitter. But you can do that. It's not productive. And you're going to look back on it and be like, God, why was I so stupid? Trust me. Trust the guy who looks back on a lot of tweets and goes, that's pretty stupid. That's pretty stupid. But, you know, do whatever you want. Do whatever makes you happy. But the competition between the leagues is good, even if they don't acknowledge that each other exists. So, wow, we're just tangent happy today. Let's move on to the third game, which also featured the Cannons, right?
Yes, Cannons came out the victors on this one. Cannon 17, Blaze 16. That's another heartbreaker for the Atlanta Blaze. This was a very, very difficult week for the boys from Atlanta. Really close game throughout much of it. You know, it's easy to kind of skip through these things because we're really just, these teams are just kind of trading body blows left and right. Basically stayed close, you know, within 1-2 goals for most of the first half. Second half, Cannon start running away with it, only to just barely hang on by the slightest of margins, thanks to a Tate Boyce save with no time left. That's right. Tate Boyce was the goalie for this one particular minute of the game. Just because he was in there because of a Nick Morocco penalty. Makes an incredible save, basically pipe to pipe. And Shane Jackson probably in hindsight wants to put it somewhere else, but he also probably felt like he had the entire goal to shoot on by the time he caught the ball. So, yeah, Tate Boyce, late-game hero. Boston Cannons hang on to defend their home turf and send Atlanta Blaze packing.
It was even more wild because the broadcasters had no idea there was even a penalty or who it was on. But with Morocco being out, Tate Boyce being a lefty, it was the most clutch save of 2019. It was that timely and that good because the pass went directly to Shane Jackson. Though, to be fair, I don't think Shane Jackson noticed that there was a goalie change, because if he did, the shot he took was never going to go in on a lefty keeper. And it was always going to go in on a righty keeper. It was a catch and quick stick low to his near pipe, goalie's far pipe. But Boyce, being great going from pipe to pipe, went over on as a lefty, stick save, clutch. His face, there's a replay where they zoom in on Boyce's face when he makes kind of the save. And he's like more surprised than anything else that he saved it, which is amazing. So great. Even though the stats say that Boyce didn't play. But you and I watched the game, so we know that he played. But it was incredible. I mean, it was a well-worked pass to a wide-open guy on the far pipe. And Boyce just made an incredible save to keep it for the Cannons.
Yeah. I mean, it was everything about it was gorgeous. The set was gorgeous. The save was just a little more gorgeous. I do want to say this because I said it wrong a minute ago. It was a Cannons versus Blaze, but the Blaze were at home, so the Cannons didn't defend their home turf. And the Blaze had, I guess, a shorter path home, sad. But regardless of that, terrible few days, like I was just saying, for the Atlanta Blaze. You know, I mean, 4-2 and really strong. You know, they just had that game where they absolutely destroyed the Bayhawks, and it was like, you know, wow, okay, you know, the Blaze really made a statement in this one. And then they dropped these two, both by a goal, not just a goal, but like a super late in the game, kick in the teeth, one goal loss. It is tough. 4-4 now. Now they're in fourth place. You know, they're sniffing the top, and now they're dropping back mid-pack. What do you think about the Blaze right now?
So here's the thing. I still think they're one of the best teams in the league. Their problem is that they lose focus all the time. The other problem I have with them is that they, you know, because of that, they have a tendency to blame things like bad calls for their losses, and probably should go back and look at some tape and acknowledge how absolutely stupid some of their long pass turnovers are. I mean, the best teams in the league have that problem too. Like Denver makes weird cross-field diagonal passes that always go out of bounds for some reason. So it's not just like I'm picking on Atlanta. But the thing is that Atlanta has this group of rookies and second-year players that are awesome. They're great. I love watching them. But when your team is that young, you have a tendency to sometimes get lost in that moment. I mean, again, I know that these are guys that went through 4 years of college playing, and now they're rookies or second-year players. It's not the same in the pros, and that's really a huge adjustment. And I think the Blaze have a couple guys like Camizio who have absolutely made that adjustment and turned their game up a little bit. They got like guys like Christian Mazzone, who is phenomenal box-to-box guy. Love his game. And they've got, you know, Randy Stats kind of running the show. But I think in this game in particular, the Cannons kind of borrowed from Denver's playbook and slid to Stats' backhand because they knew he was going to do that spoon move that you were talking about every time. Right. And in this game, it kind of resulted in not neutralizing him, but pushing him out a little bit more and getting more physical with him. And the Cannons do have enough poles that are big enough and strong enough to do that. And not every team in the league has those, but it's still really no excuse because the Blaze definitely have the personnel to win. That attack line of Palisek, Stats, and Jackson is phenomenal. It's so good. And then if that's not working, they can just invert. You know, Brendan Sunday scored a great goal in this game, inverting. Like, there's ways that teams can kind of prepare for other teams, but I feel like the Blaze don't take advantage when they're on a roll to keep rolling. And I feel like teams like the Cannons, and I think recently we've seen, you know, the Lizards and the Outlaws do the same thing, where, like, they have to keep rolling. And sometimes in the pursuit of that, they have some turnovers, but they ride the ship. And that's why, you know, the Cannons are in second place at 5-2. That's still pretty remarkable, given their last two losses are in the last 2 weeks. So, I don't know. I think it's interesting to see how everything's developing. But I think that if the Blaze can keep learning from their mistakes and keep getting better, they're still one of the best teams in the league. I mean, I don't know how you pick the playoffs if at this point we're like halfway through. I think we all know the top four teams are the Outlaws, the Cannons, the Blaze, and the Bayhawks, right?
Yeah, I'd say so.
I don't see a way that the Lizards or the Rattlers get into that mix right now. And not because the other teams have a head start, but because they're not good enough. And I think the Blaze are. They just got to fix like little mistakes that they keep making and maybe change their attitude a little bit. I think they're a little belligerent, you know, with the refs and yelling and screaming and staying on the field and stuff when they lose games. Like, maybe just take that on the chin, walk in the locker room. I don't know. That's just my one little take on that team, who I absolutely enjoy watching and love most of the players on that team, but the attitude is not amazing. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have a chance to see if they turn things around, both, you know, mentally and physically, because they're going to be playing the Cannons again this Saturday. So we'll see what they learned from this game. You know, a one-goal game like this, there are some lessons to be taken from it. If they can tighten things up a little bit, you know, maybe they can turn things around. Or else, you know, on the other hand, after losing these two games, you know, it's one of those things like a character test, right? You know, like, okay, just dropped two, now you're at 500. Where do you go from here? can they kind of recover and bounce back? And, you know, obviously beating the team that just beat them would be a very, very good sign for them moving forward.
Absolutely. Total turning point at this point in the season for the Blaze.
Yep. Now, I believe this was the last game here we got. Bayhawks versus the Dallas Rattlers. Chesapeake Bayhawks won 13 to Dallas's 11. Now, Kyle, you're never going to believe this, so brace yourself accordingly.
All right.
Dallas Rattlers started out strong, and they looked pretty good. Like, they looked impressive. And watching the game, it's like, hey, okay, all right, Dallas Rattlers, I see you. They made it seem like this might be the day that they put it all together. And then the wheels came off and they lost again.
Yeah. Can't hear it on the podcast. The whole time Chris was talking, I was nodding vigorously.
Yeah, this is kind of their move that has just been, whatever you want to call it, plaguing them, defining them. Whatever you want to call it, this has been their move through the first seven games of the season, all of which have resulted in losses for them. Perhaps the most remarkable thing in this game, you know, I kind of just hinted at it, but Dallas, they had a 7-2 lead at this one. I mean, they were stomping the Bayhawks. 7-2 lead. Didn't matter.
Chris, nothing they do matters. Bradley Voigt had one of the best goals of the year in this game, and it faded into nothingness. Imagine how good that when I saw that highlight, I was like, oh sweet, someone made a GIF or a GIF, whatever, if you're a snob. Imagine how good the highlight would have looked in HD. Whew. MLL, why are you still broadcasting games in standard def through your streaming? This is awful. If I have to pause the tape in several places just to see the uniform of the number of the guy with the ball that the camera's on. Like, what are we doing? Is your compression rate wrong? Are you putting it out to the wrong things? Like, what's happening? Because something is not right here, and you see it the most when you compare it to your competitor's picture, which is crystal clear from NBC. And you have games on ESPN Plus, you have games on Stadium. These are platforms that are well known and established for excellent production value. I mean, my theory is that LSN is still producing all the games, and that's why they all look like they're produced by LSN still. But I can neither confirm nor deny that. But that is my working theory. And until they fix that, like, I can't believe there's games on NBC Sports Boston that are not, like, fully HD. The only HD cameras that are on are when they do close-ups of the players or the huddles. Everything from the seats, from the stadium view, is low res, honestly. It's like I'm watching a buffering video from 2004. Like, gotta fix it, guys, honestly. And, again, I'm, like, ranting and picking on stuff, but this is all we got this week. So that's what we're going to do. Sorry. That's what we're doing here. But I think you were talking about something about the Rattlers losing again.
Yes, I was saying that they did, in fact, lose again. As far as Chesapeake goes, Lyle Thompson and Steele Stanwyck led the way. 2-2 for Lyle, 3-1 for Steele. Rattlers had, you know, you mentioned the Voigt goal. A bunch of guys, Sehow had a goal. Individuals chipping away kind of like that. Adams Osika actually had probably the biggest game for the Rattlers, had himself a hat trick. But as far as the game goes, I feel like at this point, you don't want to talk too much about Rattlers games.
Well, I don't.
Sure. It just, like, even, like, even if I'm talking about just regular stuff that happens, it's just like, okay, yeah, we know. You know, we know how it goes, all right? So it's like if I was narrating, like, a South Park episode and you were a Kenny fan, and you're like, all right, just get to it. Just, you know, he dies, right? That's it. So I'm sorry that that's what happened in this game. You know, it'll be cool to win sometime. Unless you're rooting for them to keep losing, which I respect both approaches. I respect people who root for the underdogs to pull it off, and I honestly respect people who genuinely root for teams to lose all the time. But the Rattlers, and I think part of this that makes it so kind of shocking to see this this difficult season for them is they do have this long history, this sort of star-studded history and roster and all that, which kind of caught my attention this game. Chris Keating playing defense for him in the game this past week, I noticed he's wearing number 11. And, you know, I looked at it and said, oh, man, you know, there's a poll wearing number 11 for the Rattlers, just like Joel White did, you know, for all of those years, for all of his success. And so it made me wonder, how should MLL teams handle their jersey numbers for the franchise stars who, you know, ultimately up and bounced on the company? Like, is there a measure of reverence? Do they pull, I'm not saying it should go up to the rafters or anything right now, but like, do you keep it aside and say, all right, hey, you know, let's not let a pole wear Joel White's jersey, you know, or like Rylan Reese is wearing Brody Merrill's 17 up in Boston. Like, do you think, like, what do you think about that? You think teams should kind of put those away and just keep them in a trunk for a little while? Like, what should the move be?
I feel like they should be holding some numbers back, but at the same time, I never expected them to do that because the MLL was perfectly content to surge onward without acknowledging the PLL or players that used to play in the MLL but now no longer do. For someone that's like a big pro lacrosse person and has followed it for a long time, it's a conundrum, really, because if you acknowledge those legendary players wore a uniform, you automatically give them a measure of respect that you don't give to the new players, which I get it. I see that. But this is kind of one of the things that is going to be a sticking point going forward. Like this pro lacrosse war between these two leagues is not going to get nicer. It's going to get meaner. Like, it's only going to take like someone wearing 99 for the Lizards for something to happen. And for a tweet to float out there. And we've already seen a couple of them float out from some overzealous players who are into the fight, like belligerent and malignant intentions. Great. It's entertaining. I don't think it's productive. But again, my whole thesis is at the end of all of this, whether it's a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, there's going to be a reckoning and everything's going to come together eventually. And I think that's when you're going to see these teams kind of retire jerseys and honor players. And, you know, it's going to have to involve some sort of merger and coming together of both entities. But I do think it's a little weird that Rylan Reese is wearing Brody Merrill's number. I think that's weird. But he also, you know, he was on Team Canada with him. Maybe it's an homage to him. You know, you don't know every player's relationship to every other player. So I think in that case, it's probably fine. I don't really know if Chris Keating is boys with Joel White. Couldn't tell you. And I think there's a lot of numbers on that team that are a little weird if you look at who's wearing them this year versus who wore them last year. But I do want to address one thing before we move off this point. I've been super hard on the Rattlers, and part of that is because it's been kind of funny because, like, someone's got to be, like, the team that doesn't win, unfortunately, and it's really not funny if you're on the team, and I understand if you, like, hate me and don't listen to the podcast because of it. But my whole thing is, in the MLL and in the history of pro lacrosse, people talk about the 2005 Bayhawks team, especially if Joe and Quint are calling a game, they will talk about the 2005 Bayhawks team, even if the Bayhawks are not involved in the game. They will find a way to bring it up somehow. It's phenomenal. They did it this week twice. I was blown away. My position has always been that the 2008 championship Rattlers team is the best lacrosse team ever assembled. And it's got legendary guys on it, like you were talking about. It had Brody Merrill, Alex Smith, Casey Powell, Joel Walters in their primes, kind of like players that worked together and made everything work and won a championship. And it was they were such a great team. So good. So good. Brett Queener was the backup. Mike Levin was the starting goalie. They were awesome. It was an awesome team. So that's kind of where, like, my, like, impatience comes, because last year you saw, like, this great team kind of almost get to that point again and then lose in the championship game. And it was kind of heartbreaking because you saw that. I feel like if you looked at that team last year, the Rattlers team, and they won. That would have been a team like that people are would 10 years from now would be talking about. But they lost. You know, so I don't know. I feel that's why my like relationship with the Rattlers franchise is a little weird. Plus, also, they were like the Nationals, and then the Nationals won in 2009, and it was mostly the 2008 team. So you could kind of combine those into one team. But still, that's where like it's not coming from a place of like hate. It's coming from a place of like actual nostalgia for the greatness of former Rochester teams. So that's kind of just clarifying my point. I'm still going to make fun of everything that happens, but I just want to clarify my point.
I think that's a good point to clarify. I think it's good we've gotten that out there. I think this has been a very productive pod, albeit highly tangential. But I feel like I feel like we're growing.
Very very therapeutic. We're going to start using some language here. It's going to be great. It's going to be fun. All right, you thought we were done, but we're not. We're going to do a two-league all-star team draft. Rosie and I, we're not going to play each other. We're just drafting guys by position first, but also guys that maybe aren't on either all-star, either league's all-star team. We're going to make the guys that are the most deserving, not the guys with the best names, not the guys with the most votes, the guys whose play is the most deserving to be named to an all-star team. And we're not going to do full teams. We're just going to do three attackmen, three middies, 3D, a face-off, an LSM, a short stick D-middie, and a goalie. We're just going to do two teams. We're going to alternate, no snake-style weirdness. And I believe, Chris, you have the first pick.
Oh, man. All right, so this is tough.
You got to do attack. Attack is the first three.
Okay. So now this is very difficult because I'm torn here because I think I've probably always taken – I think there's two guys I've always taken on every one of these teams.
Yes. I know who they are. I'm waiting.
Yes. Now here's the thing, though. I'm not taking either of them this time.
I don't believe you.
Yeah. This time – my first pick in the Universal All-Star game here. Give me Lyle Thompson.
Oh, come on. Come on. Really?
Yeah. I mean, look, there's just, I mean, obviously I knew this going in to this season, but this season I think has once again clarified now that he's playing a full year of outdoor ball that there is just nothing that this guy can't do. I mean, he's just, you know, I mean, what else do you want? You know, feeder, shooter. I mean, he rides like a monster. Anything you need, Lyle Thompson takes care of it. So I'm going to go ahead and draft him with my first pick.
Dude, you're the worst. That's all I have to say to you. My first attack pick is going to be Connor Fields. I think he's earned it, and I don't care about anything that happened last year or the year before that or anything. I only care about what he's doing now. I love his game. He's got flash. He's got speed. He's a feeder. He's a finisher. One of the best surprises – not surprises, but I think that his play is so much higher than it was last year because he's fully recovered from the knee injury, and it's so obvious that he's ascended to a different level of play. So I'm going to go with Connor Fields. Who's your second attackman?
Okay, so
Q, I guarantee you I could pick who you're going to pick. Do it.
Okay.
I know who it is without you even saying it.
All right, that's interesting. That's interesting. Because I wasn't totally sure who I was going to
Could be three guys, to be fair. This is just the problem. One of the problems with this podcast, if we have one, is that Rosie and I agree on so much stuff that there's not enough conflict. So this draft is going to be very conflict heavy. And it's basically just going to be us chirping each other for taking each other's guys. So go ahead.
Right. So this is difficult. But since this isn't actually – so I was thinking of more of a – like if I'm constructing a lineup on a field.
Okay.
How it would be, but I don't need to do that because, you know, these guys aren't actually playing. So I'm going to go ahead and get one of Lyle's indoor teammates. I'm going to put Randy Stotts on my team there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I thought, I think you thought I was going with somebody else.
I do. I thought you were going to pick Holman because you pick Holman every time and it makes me hate you every time. That's who it was, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was going to be, yep. Marcus Holman.
Okay.
But then I if I was thinking a little bit differently, I was like, yeah, maybe I'll go Holman. But I'm going Stotts because also seen just the passing and the shooting, he's just doing whatever he wants right now. Again, another person's benefiting. I think we are the real ones benefiting from seeing guys like this play the whole year. And you can just see the kind of stuff he's doing is insane. So now I've got two guys on my team who are passing and shooting at crazy high levels.
That is correct. I don't know if you could guess who I'm taking. Probably not. Actually, you could if you were... I have a very special affinity for different kinds of players, but one of the things I prize the most is shooters. Who's the best shooter on the planet?
I think that would be scientifically proven to be Ryan Brown.
That's correct. We're going with Ryan Brown. Who is your final attackman?
Marcus Holman, come on down.
Ah, there he is. There he is. There's my guy. Okay. All right. So we got Fields, we got Brown. We're doing this by merit, man. And if that's what we're doing it by, man, come on down. Justin Gutterding. You didn't see that coming. You didn't.
I did not see that coming. No. Man, they call Gutty.
Yes. Gutty is my third attackman. We're moving right on to the midfields, and I'm immediately regretting giving you the first pick. Because I know who you're taking. And so does everyone listening.
Oh, wow.
I already wrote it down.
You already wrote down I don't even know who I'm taking. Let's see here. Never mind. Tom Schreiber.
That's correct.
Come on over.
Tom Schreiber, which means I'm going to take the other best midfielder, and that is Zach Currier. Back to you. Midfielder two. We're going quick. We're going quick. I'm gonna try and catch you. We're gonna go quick.
Yikes, man. That's a good pick, man. Zach Kerr. That would have been very nice to fall back to me.
You know I can't do that.
No, I would have. No, that would have been a bad Connect Four move right there if you let me have him. All right, let me hop over in the PLL, stick with a teammate of Schreiber for a PLL guy. You know who I'm going to take on this one? I'm taking Jake Furcaro in this pick here.
Okay. He's not a teammate of Schreiber, but okay.
No, I mean league mate, I should say.
League mate, yeah.
Yeah, sticking with him. I like what Jake Furcaro has been able to do this season as far as multiple avenues of his game have gone. I think... You know, he hasn't really been a super, super reliant on the two-point shot, but he has been reliant on a lot of other things that worked out very well for him. Last game, very strong between the arcs, very strong wing play. I like what I saw. Want him on team.
You're going to be upset with this pick. Brian Cole, come on down. How you like that? How you like that? You didn't like that, did you?
That is a good pick.
Yeah.
He is very good. And I don't want to disrespect Jake. I mean, I'm going to say I would have taken Jake anyway. But I am also going to admit that I did not notice Brian Cole's name.
Fair enough.
I'm not thinking it would have had anything to do with my pick.
But he's earned it, though. That's a dude that has, like, totally earned it this year for the Blaze, man. He has been phenomenal. Phenomenal. Either league, I don't care. He is awesome. He's a great player.
Yeah. No, he is. He is outstanding. And the thing I like about him is he's outstanding in a lot of shooting styles, you know?
Yeah.
Let me see here.
You're not allowed to cheat. Don't cheat. I know you're trying to cheat right now. Don't do it. You had your chance. You had your chance. You didn't take him. We already talked about him on the podcast. Cutting his hair. You can't do it.
Oh, I mean, I'm definitely thinking about it. My only concern is, does this All-Star game have an injured spot? Or, like, I don't know if he's going to be able to produce for my team.
No, we're just doing it on merit. It's just guys that we think have really had great seasons. That's that's the criteria here.
In that case, I will, in fact, take a gentleman who might be the fastest human being alive, Mikey Schlosser.
Wow. You just did that to me.
I did it.
Wow.
I did it.
I did not think you were going to do that. Oh, my God. I'm shook. I am shook. Oh.
That's how we're doing this.
I am shook ones right now.
I will trade you Schlosser for Cole.
No. Hell no. 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 We're not doing that. Wow. Floating it back to me. I'm going to choose a man who did not make either All-Star team, but should have. And that's Brent Adams. Come on down.
Ooh, good pick. Ordering off the menu.
Yep, off the menu. We're making quesaritos up here. It's all good. Moving on to face-off. One face-off guy.
I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and take Trevor Baptiste.
And I'll take Joe Nardella. I just think those are the two best guys in the world right now, and there's not really much debate there. All right, we're moving on to an LSM. Who you got? Tough out there for LSMs these days. It's tough.
Yeah. It's kind of, yeah, it's the season's been a tough look for them. The guys you kind of expected to put up the big numbers, you know, PLO-wise with a shortened field, haven't really seen that sort of benefit as some of the other players. You know, like close middies, I think, just kind of feel like they can run like LSMs now.
That's fair.
I'm going to go ahead and pick, despite that, man, I guess I'm going to take, you know what, I'm going to take my man Rat. I'm taking Scott Ratliff.
You would.
Kindly enough to participate in one of my articles. I can't pass over somebody who has been so kind to me in the past. The man knows what he's doing at the LSM position. Got his first goal last weekend. More of that to come. Welcome to the squad, Ratliff.
Well, that's fair. I am going to take a guy who I'm pretty sure hates me, and that's Michael Earhart. So...
Well, that could fuel his competitive spirit, you know?
Yeah, it's good. I like the guys that don't like me way more than they hate me. So I'm going to work with that. I just assume all the Maryland guys hate me because of all the podcasts I did where I told Dan Abern I would bottle his tears when they lost and then they won the championship and rubbed it in my face for a year. So just you won. You win. You don't have to hate me forever. I'm still your friend. All right, we're starting with defense. Three picks. You get the first one. Again, I immediately regret giving you the first pick. Why did I do that?
That's
such a poor decision.
You know what? Why don't you take the first defenseman? Because so that way, you know, like, I shouldn't get first pick at every position.
That's a good point. You have gotten first pick in the last all of them. So I'll take the goalie, too. But... first defender, the best defender this year for me, honestly, it's been Garrett Eppel. So I'm going to take Garrett Eppel with that pick.
You know what? I actually 100% agree with you. I think he has had the best year. I think he's been phenomenal. I mean, that being said, I'm going to take Tucker Durkin, and I'm not going to really cry about that.
Okay. I mean, even after Rambo turned him inside out?
Yeah, he did not have a great game.
Rough game.
Rambo.
Rough game. Rough game.
But, I mean, as long as you didn't pick Rambo, I'm good to go.
It's fair. Give me Bryce Young.
Oof.
What a year he has had. totally emerged as one of the better help, like, utility. Like, he can score goals, he can get GBs, he clears the ball, he clears the crease, he hits people, he throws good checks, he's never out of position. Just such a solid number two. Can't think of anybody better for the second pick.
No, that is a really good pick there as well. And I'm starting to feel what you felt by having to respond to what you do. It's not a great place to be. That being said, I'm taking Matt Dunn.
Okay.
Just because sort of a similar sort of situation. I love the way the Whipsnakes have played defense. Love the way that they've cleaned up rebounds. He was on my team in the week last week when I did it. I think he's been fantastic as well. So I'll take him.
That is a excellent pick. I think we might have all PLL polls here. Because I'm going to take, despite his distrust of the liberal media, Matt McMahon.
I like the potential. You're going to have an interesting locker room when you're giving that pep talk.
That's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. I feel like the mutual hatred of all these players will come together to form a vortex where they can only win with pure evil in their hearts. And that's what I want to see.
I like it. You've been playing the long game this whole time. I respect that.
It's true. Who do you got for your third guy, third defender?
This is a difficult one. It's tough between two guys here. I feel like the safer pick is I stick with Matt Landis, who I thought was really good last week. I think he was another one of my Team of the Week guys last week. Or else do I kind of roll a little bit heavier and go for Jared Newman? Hope maybe he can pull down a two or three, a couple transition twos maybe. I'm going to play it safer with Landis.
All right. All right, and last selections are goalie. I'm going to pick, man, I have praised a lot of goalies this year. It's really uncharacteristic. I'm just going to put that out there.
It's been a great year for goalies.
It really has. I mean, shortened shot clock in the PLL, you know, new guys in the MLL not really getting used to the shooting space, getting that quicker double. Man. Really tough choice here. Man, my heart says one thing, my head says another. And I know that if I pick one, you're going to pick the other and vice versa.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, all right.
I'm like a vulture.
Okay. You know what? Give me Kyle Bernlohr.
Kyle Bernlohr.
You can have him. You can have Troutner.
Timmy Troutner.
Yeah, you can have Troutner. All right. All right. These are good teams, actually. They're a little PLL heavy, but, like, listen. Truth isn't mean. All right. To recap, Chris's team is at attack. Lyle Thompson, Randy Stats, Marcus Holman. Chris's midfield is Tom Schreiber, Jake Ficarro, and Mikey Schlosser. His face-off guy is Trevor Baptiste. His LSM is Scott Ratliff. His close defense is Tucker Durkin, Matt Dunn, and Matt Landis.
Yep.
And his goalie is Timmy Troutner from the Redwoods. My team is Connor Fields, Ryan Brown, Justin Gutterding at attack. My midfield is Zach Currier, Brian Cole, and Brent Adams. My face-off guy, although I wrote Baptiste for both of us, probably because I was mad that you took Baptiste, is Joe Nardella. My LSM is Michael Earhart. My defense is Garrett Eppel, Bryce Young, and Matt McMahon. And my goalie is Kyle Bernlohr. Double Kyle's, double the effectiveness. We just thought it'd be fun to do kind of an exercise where we picked guys that we thought really killed it this year in either league. I mean, the All-Stars are fairly accurate if we only have one guy picked on there that's off the board for both leagues and isn't in either All-Star game. Although Brent Adams, I believe, is competing in fastest player which I think he's already won. Right?
I would say so.
I think he's already won that. So, yeah, that's pretty much the lacrosse portion of the podcast. And now we're going to move on to the recommendation of the week. Chris, I assume you have another weird food item?
That would be a safe assumption, yeah.
All right, I'll let you go first.
Okay, so my recommendation, I guess it's something that's kind of old, but it is seasonal. So that's why I'm recommending it now. Apparently, they're bringing back Christmas tree cakes. Are you familiar with Christmas tree cakes?
Aren't they just zebra cakes, but in the shape of a Christmas tree?
Maybe. I'm not familiar with zebra cakes.
Really?
I've seen them, but I've never eaten them.
Oh, man. That was like, you had to, like, get a great trade to get those at lunch. You had to, like, have something in the bag that no one's ever seen before to get someone's zebra cake. Or there was violence. Like, zebra cakes are maybe the king of lunchtime snacking throughout high school, I would even say.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So I just looked it up, and it does appear that zebra cakes are fundamentally similar to Christmas tree cakes. The frosting might be a little. Is it? I assume it's a chocolate frosting on the zebra cake.
I mean, it's like a mix. It's like a best of both worlds situation there. It's really just sugar.
Okay, yeah. So I'm guessing they probably taste remarkably similar.
Yes.
But so, yeah. So that's a Christmas tree cake for you. And what they're doing right now is, for whatever reason, they've decided to bring Christmas tree cakes and relabel them Christmas in July Christmas tree cakes. So, limited time, go out to Walmart and pick up some Christmas tree cakes if you want. They've got a postcard from Santa who's like, hanging out on the beach or something on the front in like a Hawaiian shirt because they're really pushing this whole theme. But for whatever reason, somebody thought it'd be a good idea, so they're bringing it back, I guess just for this month or something like that. So if you miss Christmas tree cakes and you're not going to make it the whole year, go out to the store, go to Walmart and grab you some. I'm not sure if I'm going to be participating in this. It feels a little unnatural to buy Christmas tree cakes in July, even if that's, you know, they're the selling point. It kind of feels like it's like a Jurassic Park sort of thing. You know, I don't know. I feel like we're manipulating nature here. Obviously, Christmas tree cakes are not natural, yeah, but they followed a natural cycle that they come in the winter and then they're gone. So I don't know how I feel about it. But if you have no qualms about it, go on out and eat as many Christmas tree cakes as you like this summer.
Yeah, we were too busy wondering if we could do it that we forgot to address the situation of whether or not we should do it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm with you. They're delicious. I'm gonna up you on that. Those are a phenomenal snack choice for those that are, you know, in that area where you can still eat a bucket of sugar and not have to sleep for 2 hours afterwards. All right. My recommendation of the week is for everyone to do two things this summer. The first thing is the unhealthy thing, which goes hand in hand with Christmas tree cakes. And that's take a staycation and binge watch a show from the golden age of TV. I'm talking something you haven't seen, something that's widely considered to be a classic, like The Sopranos, Breaking Bad, The Wire. In my world, it's like Justified and Banshee and shows like that. I did this week. I had a little staycation. So I watched all the games from this week today in a row, which was a mistake because I kind of took Saturday and Sunday for myself for the first time. You know, figured it's Chris can do the heavy lifting. I'll come in. And then, you know, my better nature got a hold of me and I was like, wait, what if there's a panic moment? I have to watch all these games. So did it anyway. But on Saturday and Sunday, the show I chose to binge watch that I've never watched before is Deadwood. And I'm into it. I'm not as into it as I am those other shows that I listed, but it's really good. And that's my first recommendation. Just do that for yourself. Take a day, sit at home, make sure your significant other's like at work or something. They don't need to know. Just take a day for yourself, staycation that day. Second thing, This is the better thing. Go outside. Please. Please, do it for me, who I can't even go outside. I'm, like, chained to this computer. I open it with my own blood. That's the touch sensor. It's just the genetic... I gotta prick my finger every time to turn this damn computer on. Go outside, have some fun. Saturday night, I went and sat around a fire with a bunch of friends I haven't talked to in a while. And man, I talked a lot because I haven't seen a lot of people. I'm just out here watching games and writing articles. So take my advice. Go outside, socialize. Make sure you take a shower before you get out. And that's pretty much it. Anything else before we take off here, Chris?
No, I don't think so. If any of you forgot, PLL All-Star Game, live from Los Angeles, this upcoming weekend. I guess they won't hear a podcast between now and then. So, I mean, check that out. I'm sure if you follow on Twitter or something like that, you'll definitely get your updates. And I guess that's the latest thing that we'll be exploring in some way, right?
Absolutely. And again, you know, look for Chris's Top 10 and the PLL playlist on Friday, as well as MLL Team of the Week. And I will have my now second annual Mikey Schlosser All-Stars up for MLL this week as well. We'll return next week with a PLL All-Star breakdown, and we'll talk about all the MLL games from this weekend. Chris, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me at ChrisRosie22.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TheKyleDebitt. But remember to be nice. No one likes a jerk. Have an excellent day.